House of the Arrow by A.E.W. Mason. Adapted by Alan Downer. With Richard Pascoe as Inspector Anno, Moya Leslie as Betty Harlow, and Benedict Blythe as Jim Frobisher. The House of the Arrow.
Good morning, Monsieur. I regret I did not catch your name.
Frobisher. Jim Frobisher from London.
Ah, yes. I am Inspector Anno.
How do you do?
Please come in. I apologize for keeping you waiting. Would you care to take a seat?
Thank you. It's good of you to see me.
I am curious, Monsieur Frobisher. What brings you to this Sûreté?
Oh, my business is quickly explained. I'm a partner, a junior partner, in a firm of solicitors, Hapgood and Frobisher. We look after the English interests of a family in Dijon. The family has the name of Harlow. The surviving member of this family, Betty Harlow, a girl of 20, has been charged with murder by a Russian, Boris Verbersky, who is connected to the family by marriage.
And he accuses her of murdering whom?
Betty Harlow is the niece and adopted daughter of the late Simon Harlow. She is accused of murdering his widow, Jeanne-Marie Harlow, in Dijon on the night of the 27th of April.
I see. And why do you come to me, monsieur?
Well, my firm has been informed that you, Inspector Anno, have been put in charge of the case.
You have been correctly informed. I congratulate you. The first point is scored by you.
It wasn't my intention to score points, sir, only to get at the truth. We are not in competition. In fact, I'd regard it as an honor if you were to look on me as an albeit second-rate colleague who, by good fortune, can give you a little help.
No harm in laying it on with a trowel, eh? What kind of help?
This kind. Two letters from Boris Verbersky addressed to my firm. They both demand money, the second with threats. They were written, the first shortly before, the second just after Madame Harlow's death. And before Verbersky brought this charge. This is the first.
My beloved sister.
His sister-in-law, in fact.
Cannot live for long in spite of all the care and attention I give her. She has left me, as you no doubt know, a large share of her fortune. Already then, it is mine, yes? Expedite me, then, a little of what is mine. £500 will do, and accept my distinguished salutations. Was he, in fact, a beneficiary?
No. Jeanne-Marie Harlow bequeathed everything she possessed without condition to the adopted daughter, Betty.
And the second letter?
Here.
It is outside belief. Nothing has she left me. I must now have £1,000 from you.
You note he's doubled his demand.
I speak, of course, to my niece, that hard one. She snap her fingers at me £1,000 at once. Or there will be awkwardnesses.
And more in the same vein.
Yes, no doubt the letters have a certain importance, but we mustn't exaggerate it.
Exaggerate? Well, this is clearly a clumsy attempt at blackmail.
Blackmail is an ugly word.
And blackmail's an ugly thing. Verbersky is a villain. Look in his dossier. He's resident in France. You're bound to have one on him.
Ah, the legend of the dossier. You have that belief too, huh? If her coal mines fail, France can always keep warm by burning her dossier. They are an outmoded institution. This is 1924, monsieur. Here at the Sûreté, we are like your Miss Betty Harlow. We snap our fingers at the dossier.
I see.
Oh, you look at me all cold and stony. You must become accustomed to my games, monsieur, if we are to work together in Dijon.
Will that be possible for us to work together?
You have been frank with me, so I will relieve your mind. The prefect at Dijon doesn't take this Verbersky affair seriously. Neither do I. But it is a charge of murder and must therefore be examined with care.
Of course.
Equally, of course, there will be behind these letters some little unpleasant fact. In cases of blackmail, this is always so. Are you aware of some shameful little secret, some blot on the honor of the Harlow family, which a public trial would bring to light?
None at all.
No matter. It is a simple affair, and with these two letters, simpler than ever.
If the case is so simple, why have you been called in?
The Waberski affair is a pretense. I go to Dijon on quite another matter. You shall smoke.
Thank you.
It is thus, monsieur. The little towns of France have their own crimes, and the most pernicious of these is the anonymous letter. Suddenly they will come like a pestilence, full of vile charges, difficult to refute, and sometimes, perhaps, true. For a while, if money is demanded, money is paid. But slowly the social life of the town is poisoned, and in the end, dreadful things happen. Such a plague has descended on Dijon. And now, at last, a year too late, they have sent for me to save their face. See? Here are some of the letters. Read them for yourself.
Oh, thank you. This is abominable.
They do not make a nice sauce for your breakfast, do they?
Well, I wouldn't have believed. How can people write such... Inspector, I think I can give you some more help. These letters were typed on a...
Corona machine, eh?
Oh, you knew that already?
From the percentage and dollar signs where, by error, the stop for figures was used instead of the stop for capitals, yes.
I'm glad we're not on opposite sides.
Don't expect too much of me, lest you be disappointed. Your letters, monsieur.
And yours.
By the way, how did you know I had been put in charge of the case?
We received a telegram from Miss Harlow.
Curious.
I'm sorry?
May I see the telegram?
Of course. Here you are.
These dates. Astonishing. On Sunday it is arranged I shall go secretly to Dijon. By Monday, Miss Harlow has heard the news and can telegraph it to you in London by Tuesday morning. bad news. Travels fast, huh?
So it would seem.
Then what does she say? Please send someone to help me at once. The prefect of police has called in Arnaud, the great detective of the Sûreté in Paris. They must think me guilty. Betty Harlow. Poor girl, the fingers, they snap themselves no longer. Well, in a few days, we'll make it right for her.
That's excellent news.
You travel to Dijon this afternoon?
That was my intention.
If you have no objection, we shall travel some of the way together. What then should I know of the Harlow family, monsieur?
Well, Simon Harlow was the owner of the famous Clos de Prince vineyard on the Côte d'Or to the east of Dijon. Mm-hmm. He also had an estate in Norfolk, the Maison Grenelle in Dijon, where he spent most of his time, and a villa at Monte Carlo.
A wealthy man.
Well, certainly well-to-do. At the age of 45, he married a French lady, Jeanne-Marie Raviard, whom he had known and been fond of for some time. I believe they had to wait to be married for more than 10 years until her previous husband died.
And during those 10 years, was there perhaps an affair between them?
Oh, not that I know of. But I get your drift. You're still looking for the little secret?
Oh, one must examine every possibility. It's the only way to get the glimpse of the truth. But forgive me, go on.
Simon Harlow was a collector, and a very Catholic one. My partner, Mr. Hapgood, informs me that one sitting room at the Maison Grenelle was a perfect treasure house of beautiful and out-of-the-way things.
Uh-huh.
Sadly, Mr. Harlow died at the age of 51, after only 6 years of marriage.
So, it would seem there is nothing to light a candle for us there.
Well, I'm afraid not.
Tell me about their wife.
We know extraordinarily little about her. She never came to England. For the last 2 years or so, her heart had begun to trouble her. She was an invalid, more or less, and seems to have been content with Dijon. So there's nothing to help us there, either.
Then we are only left with their niece, Betty.
I understand that she was adopted by the Harlows about 2 years after their marriage, when it became clear they were unlikely to have any children of their own. My partner met her once, about 5 years ago, on a visit to Dijon. Rather beautiful, he says. It greatly distressed him to think of her alone in that big old house with an aggrieved and half-crazed man nearby, thinking out awkwardnesses for her. Well, almost alone, anyway. It seems she has a sort of companion. Anne Upcott, who wrote me a rather long and rambling letter addressed to the firm, informing me of Verbersky's accusation. How he'd even attempted to enlist her support before going off to the police. It was a strange letter, full of foreboding. And all the stranger since it was couched in personal terms, as if we knew each other.
And you didn't?
I was unaware of her existence till the letter came.
Strange indeed. That leaves Boris Verbersky.
I met him last year when I was on holiday in the south of France. I went to Monte Carlo with some papers for Mrs. Harlow's signature. She was ill, the niece was out. I could only speak to Verbersky. He seemed to be the sort of man who might go off the deep end at any moment. Now it seems he has. But on his return from the prefecture, he at least had the decency to pack his bags and move out.
Interesting. Well, Mr. Frobisher, see, we are approaching Dijon. I will leave you now, and we will alight separately and go to our respective hotels.
But I'll see you in Dijon.
Oh, no doubt.
Shouldn't we make some arrangements? If we are to work together, I might need to reach you quickly.
At 9 o'clock each night, I shall be sitting in the hall of the Grand Taverne across the square from the station. I shall be on the left, seated in the corner. You can find me there.
Capital.
And if I am talking to anyone else, avoid me like the plague.
Ah, Mr. Frobisher.
Good morning, Miss Harlow.
Thank you so much for coming. I had no right to expect you so soon.
I'm glad to be here.
Are you? I shall give you all my troubles to carry.
I shall do my best, of course.
Come into the library.
Thank you.
Mr. Frobisher, this is Senor Espinosa, an old acquaintance of mine. Mr. Frobisher from London.
Senor Frobisher.
How do you do?
Senor Espinosa was just leaving.
Was I? I don't recall saying so.
Please, Carlos.
Remember, I am a Catalan, Mademoiselle Betty, and Catalans are not easily put to flight.
Mr. Frobisher is here on private business. Please.
Very well. But be warned, I shall return. Goodbye, Mr. Frobisher.
Goodbye.
You needn't trouble, Gaston. I can find my own way out.
Dear Carlos, I suppose I ought to be grateful to him for making me laugh. It seems such ages since I laughed.
Please don't.
I'm sorry.
I was so happy to hear you laugh, even before I told you the good news.
Good news?
Read these letters. And notice the dates.
They're from Monsieur Boris.
Well, you'll quickly appreciate their value to us.
I always knew it was money he wanted. If only he'd waited. I'd already made up my mind to make some arrangements for him.
There was no obligation.
No, but it seemed only fair. But he gave me no time and bullied me. Well, that's when I snapped my fingers at him, I suppose. And later when he brought this charge against me. Well, to have suggested any arrangement would have been the same as pleading guilty.
True.
And I was frightened. The examining magistrate was very stern. He forbade me to use a motor car as if he expected me to run away. Well, I came home a little rattled, as you can imagine, and sent off that panicky telegram. I regretted it afterwards, but... Who's that?
Sorry?
Come to the window. A man. Look, there he is. Oh, he's coming up into the house.
It's Arnaud.
Arnaud, if there's a day, but...
It's all right. You have nothing to fear from him. I called on him yesterday and explained everything.
You did?
Yes, and he said in a few days we'll make it right for her. Those were his very words, so you see, you really needn't worry.
Mr. Frobisher, I'm so grateful. You've forgotten nothing which could help me. And if what you say is true, I shall be more than pleased to meet him.
A delightful room, mademoiselle. So many books.
It is the library, Inspector.
And on so many subjects. May I look?
Please do. My uncle was a great collector with very wide interests.
I told you he had Catholic tastes.
Ah, yes, indeed. Oh, formidable. Mademoiselle, I must inform you that the body of Madame Harlow was exhumed last night. Oh. These necessities are distressing, but we do Madame no hurt, and we have to think of the living. You. And make sure no suspicion shall rest on you. No.
I understand.
Soon we shall have the analyst's report, and I shall present this, along with your answers to questions I shall put to you, to the examining magistrate, who will then no doubt present you with his compliments, and I shall return to Paris.
And that will be all?
For you, yes. For our little Boris, no. I look forward to half an hour with him. He will not forget Anno in a hurry. And I shall laugh all the way to Paris. You'll laugh at my foolishness. Good. And before he returns to London, you must teach Monsieur Frobisher that divinest of the arts. He is too solemn by half. Now, mademoiselle, the question. As far as we know, Madame Harlow died peacefully in her bed on the night of the 27th of April?
Yes.
I understand that her heart had been troubling her for some time.
That's right.
Was she under medical supervision?
Yes, there is a trained nurse. Her room is at the end of the passage.
How far away?
There are two rooms between, a dressing room and the so-called treasure room. They are fitted out as reception rooms now. It was convenient for Madame to have a suite of rooms on the ground floor, since her complaint made stairs dangerous.
Yes, I see. Would a cry from Madame Harlow's room at night be heard in the nurse's room?
There was a bell by Madame's bed within easy reach.
An acceptable arrangement, no doubt. But was there no room nearer which could have been set aside for the nurse?
There was one next to my aunt's room with a communicating door.
Aha.
Excuse me,
monsieur.
Surely it would save time if we paid a visit to these rooms and saw them for ourselves.
An excellent idea. Ingenious. But unfortunately, the commissaire of police has sealed them up. And these seals must be broken only in his presence, otherwise...
Oh, yes, I see. Sorry.
So, mademoiselle, now to return to my point. How was it that the nurse did not sleep in the room with the communicating door? Would not that have been more suitable?
Inspector, my aunt has been an invalid for 3 years, but she had a strong will and wouldn't admit to her malady. She intended to get well. It distressed her always to have a uniformed nurse nearby.
That seems reasonable.
When she had a critical attack, the nurse was moved. But as soon as the attack subsided, back she went. Madame wouldn't endure it. Does that answer your question, Inspector?
Absolutely. So let us come back to the night of the 27th. Was Madame in her usual health that night?
If anything, a little better.
Which is why you didn't hesitate to go that evening to a dance.
Why should I hesitate? It was not far away, at the house of some friends, the Dupuyacs. I could return at a moment's notice. The life of the household has to go on normally, Inspector.
Yes. What time did you leave here?
Shortly before 9. I was wearing a new dress. I went to Madame's room to show her how I looked in it. Then I said good night and left.
And at what hour did you return here?
It was well after 1. I remember particularly because I was concerned at keeping the chauffeur out so late. It wasn't until the next morning that... I heard of Madame's death.
Ah.
My maid, Francine, came running into my room with the news and... I'm so sorry.
Are all these questions necessary, Inspector? Miss Harlow has been under a considerable strain.
Betty, my dear, what's the matter?
Oh, Anne, my dear girl. There. I shall be all right in a moment.
What's been going on?
Perhaps we should introduce ourselves. I am Inspector Anno of the Sûreté, and
Mr.
this
Frobisher,
is...
Mr. Frobisher! Thank God! I knew you'd come. I wasn't aware you'd met last year at Monte Carlo. Perhaps Mr. Frobisher has forgotten.
Miss Upcott, in the case of such an exquisite young lady, how could he possibly have forgotten?
Yes. How are you, Miss Upcott?
Much, much happier now that you're here.
All right, Inspector, if you wish to continue now.
Mademoiselle, I've been a very troublesome person, but we are very close now to the end of this ordeal. Two more points, in fact.
I'm ready.
First, I believe you inherit the whole of Madame's fortune?
Quite unexpectedly, yes. I gained the impression that a good deal of it was to be left to Monsieur Boris, since he continually repeated that it was so.
Oh, no doubt, but was Madame generous to you during her life?
Very. I received an ample allowance, but if I wanted more, I only had to ask.
So, I have finished. I will propose now that Miss Upcott show me the outside of these sealed reception rooms and perhaps the rest of the house.
Of course.
If Mademoiselle has no objections.
None at all.
If you'd like to come this way, then.
It is my pleasure. Miss Harlow.
Yes, Inspector?
One more question, which may appear a little strange.
Yes.
Since Boris Vaberski brought his accusation, have you by any chance been pestered with any of these anonymous letters which are flying about Dijon?
Well, why should anyone...
Yes, I have received one.
You have?
You never told me.
It was very slanderous, and I shouldn't have taken any notice, but for one thing.
Which was?
It mentioned, Inspector Anno, that you were coming from Paris to take charge of the case.
I see. And when did this letter arrive?
Let me see. It must have been Sunday morning.
May I see it?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, you destroyed it, of course.
No, it's in the drawer of my writing table, in my sitting room. But unfortunately, the room sealed up.
They cannot run away, then. So, Miss Upcott, I am now at your disposal entirely. If you will kindly lead the way, au revoir, Mademoiselle Betty. I shall not trouble you again until I have a report of the analyst. I wish you good day.
Good day, Inspector.
Monsieur Frobisher?
Inspector?
He thinks I'm guilty, Jim.
Betty, you mustn't believe that, please. I'm sure he already knew the answers to his questions. He merely wanted to see how you would answer them. And every answer you gave made clear your innocence.
To you, perhaps, but to him.
I'm sure of it. You're making too much of little things.
Thank you for being so reassuring.
There, Inspector. I think that's everything. Unless you want to see outside.
I shall do that as I leave. You've been most kind, Mademoiselle.
I'm pleased to help in any way I can.
Then perhaps you will assist me to get clear in my mind these troublesome dates. I'm becoming rather confused.
If I can, of course.
After the funeral, you returned to the house and the notary read the will.
Yes.
In Waberski's presence?
Yes.
Yet he waits 1 week, precisely, till Saturday the 7th of May, to go off to the Prefecture of Police to make his charge.
That's right.
And on the Sunday morning, the anonymous letter arrives.
That's what Betty said, yes.
And on the same morning, the commissaire comes and seals the doors?
Yes, he came at 11 o'clock.
Oh, you notice the time?
I tend to notice such things.
Oh, it's a rare gift. Tell me, did the commissaire search the rooms before he sealed them?
No. Neither he nor his assistant, Maurice Thévenet. It struck me as rather strange at the time.
Oh, no doubt he was leaving it all to me. To discover with my magnifying glass incriminating evidence in rooms which have been wide open to their household.
Old English gold plate. Marks and monograms on pottery and porcelain. And books on every subject under the sun. One can see your uncle was a collector.
Jim, may I ask you a great favour?
Of course.
Will you move out of the Hotel d'Arcy and come and stay here?
Betty, there's no reason on earth why I should. A telephone call and I can be here in 5 minutes.
I don't feel safe, please.
Very well. I'm entirely at your disposal.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Well, the inspector's gone. I must say I don't find him so alarming.
And Jim has agreed to stay. Isn't that excellent news? We can breathe easily at last.
Good morning, Inspector.
Ah, Monsieur Frobisher. I hope you enjoyed your breakfast.
I haven't expected you quite so early. I hope you weren't bored.
Oh, with so many fascinating books to look at. Impossible. So you left your hotel?
I had little choice.
I understand. Who could refuse two such charming young ladies?
Inspector, it was my concern for Miss Harlow which brought me to the Maison Grenelle.
Ah, but of course. What it is to be young. I have sent for Waberski. I'm expecting him now.
Capital. I shouldn't wonder if I thumped him.
You will be in there.
But
if we confront him at once, we will get nothing out of him.
And what is there to be got?
Oh, something perhaps. Perhaps nothing. He could be the writer of the anonymous letters. I can afford to neglect no clue. Ah, now please, monsieur, here comes our hero from the steps. Wait in the next room.
Anno, I insist I meet this man.
You shall, but later. Now please, in there. I do not ask you to shut the door. You will see and hear everything. Now, quickly.
Oh, very well.
If you think that would be necessary. Monsieur Boris.
Thank you, Gaston. Show him in. Will you please tell the ladies we are ready?
Very well, monsieur.
You can see and hear, my friend?
Yes.
Then let the curtain rise.
I have received a message.
Ah, Monsieur Waberski. Please, be seated.
I understood the examining magistrate had sent for me.
I am his agent.
I don't know you.
My name is Anno.
Anno? Means nothing to me.
Of the Sûreté in Paris.
Ah, to be sure.
I thought a little informal conversation between you, me, and the two young ladies might be helpful.
Very well.
Monsieur Boris?
Ladies, please come in. Miss Upcott, if you would be kind enough to close the door.
Yes, of course.
I thought Mr. Frobisher...
All in good time. Now, please do make yourselves comfortable.
I prefer to stand.
As you wish, monsieur. So, now let us take things in order. Monsieur Vaberski, you state that on the night of the 27th of April, this young lady, Betty Harlow, did willfully give to her adoptive mother and benefactress, Jean-Marie Harlow, an overdose of a narcotic, probably morphine, by which her death was brought about.
Yes, I declare that.
Administered, you claim, in a glass of lemonade, which Madame always had at her bedside.
And then she hurried off to dance till morning, whilst her victim died.
That's not true.
Please, mademoiselle, your opportunity will come. Now, what perplexes me, monsieur, is why you waited so long before you took action. Now, listen to the dates. On the night of the 27th, your sister-in-law dies. You do nothing. On the 30th, she is buried. Still, you do nothing. It is not till 1 week after that you launch your accusation. Why?
I can explain.
Then do so.
In my heart, I knew from the first that murder had been committed, but not yet in my head. So I think, and gradually I begin to see reasons and motives. And then, on 7th May, my picture is complete. Mm. On that day, at last, I know it in my head.
Well, go on.
Well, I am in the street of the Gambetta, whose reputation is not of the best. And I see this woman, my niece, come out of a shop a few yards in front of me. Mm. I do not believe my eyes. It was the shop of Jean Cladel.
Was there any reason why a young lady shouldn't visit this shop?
You're not of Dijon, or you wouldn't ask this question. Ask any Dijonais about Jean Cladel, herbalist. Better still, ask the prefecture. Twice he has been tried for selling prohibited drugs.
Indeed.
But each time he has scraped through. He has powerful friends. Oh, yes.
Now, mademoiselle, what do you have to say to this story?
It's a lie.
You did not visit the shop of this Jean Cladel on the 7th of May.
I have never been in the Rue Gambetta in all my life.
Of course, she doesn't admit it. One fights for one's skin.
In your opinion, why should she have been visiting the shop of Jean Cladel that day?
To pay, monsieur. Why else?
10 days after Madame's death?
Cladel's wares are expensive and must be paid for more than once.
By wares, you mean poison?
Yes.
An interesting theory, but what if I tell you that Madame's body has been exhumed and no morphia was found in it than one sleeping dose would explain and no trace of any other poison?
I don't believe you.
Well, I have here the analyst's report. Read it if you wish.
I care nothing for this report. My niece, too, has friends in high places. What you're telling me is that you wish to avoid a scandal. What use in stirring the mud? Me? I care only for the truth.
And what is the truth, Monsieur Vaberski? The truth is that you wrote 2 letters demanding money.
What letters?
To a firm of London solicitors, Hapgood and Frobisher.
I do not recall.
You deny that you know of this firm?
They handled the affairs of my late sister, but...
Mr. Frobisher, would you come in, please?
Good morning, Mr. Vaberski.
Now, perhaps you would like to refresh Monsieur Vaberski's memory.
Gladly. I have the letters here. Dear Mr. Hapgood, it is outside belief. Nothing has she left me. I must now have £1,000 from you.
No, you misunderstand, I think. This was merely a request.
£1,000 at once, or there will be awkwardnesses.
What kind of awkwardnesses, monsieur?
A clumsy phrase. My English is poor. What I intended...
What you intended was blackmail.
No, it's not true.
Blackmail, monsieur. You make us all ashamed.
I meant no harm.
You'll tell that to the judge if you dare. I committed blackmail, but I meant no harm. Oh, he'd give you 5 years more.
I am a poor man. Madame Harlow was generous to me. One has to live.
Go. Return to your hotel.
An apology. Perhaps.
Go, but do not try to leave Dijon until we have decided what steps we wish to take.
Yes. Yes, of course. Thank you. You have my promise. I will not run away.
Well.
One almost feels sorry for him now. What a relief. I feel as if a weight has been lifted from my shoulders.
I regret, mademoiselle, the ordeal is not yet over.
Hmm?
I believe that Madame was indeed poisoned in this house on the night of April the 27th.
Jim, I don't understand.
Inspector, if no trace of poison was discovered...
No trace at all.
Then why do you make this accusation, and whom do you accuse?
No one.
Then what?
Let me show you how I spent the half hour whilst I was waiting for you this morning. Now look at this book. Written by a professor of medicine at the University of Edinburgh and presented with the professor's compliments to Mr. Simon Harlow. Now turn to the plate opposite page 58.
Anne, I don't understand this at all.
Nor I.
Strophanthus hispidus. It's an African plant.
The seeds of which are used to make the famous arrow poison. So deadly, it has no antidote. So wicked, it leaves no trace.
Let me see.
Oh, my dear, I know this is just one book among thousands in this room. Simply because you found...
It is the only one without a film of dust. The servants are not always as conscientious as they should be. This one has been read, and recently.
But it's still only a book... A book can't kill.
Can't it, mademoiselle? Now, look more closely. Below the illustration, the professor has written a tiny note.
See page 37.
Now, turn back the pages, if you will.
Oh, here we are. It's a picture of an arrow.
Read on.
Figure F is the representation of a poison arrow lent me by Simon Harlow, Esquire, of the Maison Grenelle in Dijon. The strophanthus seed has been pounded up in water and mixed with reddish clay, and the compound smeared thickly over the head of the arrow shaft. The arrow is quite new and the compound fresh.
The question, therefore, is where now is Simon Harlow's arrow?
It could be anywhere.
If it's in this house...
Yes, mademoiselle?
It's presumably in my sitting room.
Your sitting room?
We call it the treasure room. It's half museum, half living room. After my uncle died, Madame had the door which led to her dressing room locked. I use it as a sitting room. Another door opens onto the hall.
And that door is now sealed?
Yes.
You have never seen the arrow?
Not that I remember. There is a locked cabinet containing some horrible things. It could be kept there.
No, if it was kept at all. It may well have been disposed of at any time. Look, Anna, I don't believe any murder was committed here. After all, on what are you building your case? We don't know if the arrow's in the house, whether it ever was. And the analyst's report says no poison was discovered, so how can you claim that any was administered? It's guesswork.
Guesswork which will keep us living in a nightmare.
And if, when we search that locked cabinet, the arrow should be there? You see, my friends, I am wondering about something. What if Waberski was in the street of the Gambetta paying Jean Cladel or making excuses for not paying? Which is probable. Or retrieving the arrow, now clean of its poison, which is the most probable of all.
I never thought of that.
He expected a legacy. He needed money immediately. He had a motive. With the arrow, he also had the means.
So you're suggesting he handed the book and the arrow over to Jean Cladel,
who made up a solution in alcohol which, injected from a hypodermic needle, would cause death within 15 minutes and leave no trace.
Inspector, I can't believe Monsieur Boris guilty of so horrible a murder. I can't.
There was someone in the house that night.
Anne?
Well, what are you saying, Miss Upcott?
Oh, God. I shall never forgive myself. I could have hindered the murder.
Place the chairs here, Frobisher, in the shade.
I'm being as fast as I can.
It's cooler here in the garden. Now please be seated, Miss Upcott. And when you feel fully recovered, you shall tell us your story.
I've arranged the cushions for you.
Thank you.
And no one to overhear us but the birds. Ah, I shall smoke, if it is permitted.
Yes, of course.
How are you, Anne?
I'm fine now. It was just a little dizziness, that's all.
Perhaps a glass of water?
There's no need, truly. Thanks.
Ah, we're waiting?
Yes. I'm ready. I didn't go to the dance at the Topouillacs on the night of the 27th. As soon as Betty had gone, I went upstairs to my sitting room. There, above the library, I had an important letter to write. I decided to put my feet up as I thought out the terms of the letter. I lay down on my bed. I'd been playing tennis. I was tired. You can guess what happened.
You went to sleep?
Yes. Uh-huh. I awoke, feeling chilly. I felt guilty for not having written the letter. I'd promised Betty. Then it occurred to me that the address was in her room downstairs. Still dazed from sleep, I went out onto the landing. The house was in total darkness. I assumed everyone was asleep. I didn't want to rouse anybody, so I went without bothering to turn on the light. I know every tread of the staircase. The darkness didn't bother me. When I got to Betty's room, I opened the door and switched on the light, and hastily switched it off again. I just had time to notice the clock on the top of the marquetry cabinet. The time was 10:30.
Why did you turn the light off?
The door to Madame's dressing room was open, and a bright light burned beyond.
The light burned in the dressing room or the bedroom?
The bedroom, I think. Or there would have been more light in the treasure room. Where I stood, I was completely in darkness. There was just this band of light. It lit up the sedan chair in the corner till it glistened like silver.
There's a sedan chair in the treasure room?
One of Uncle's most valued possessions.
Hmm. It will be interesting to see. Go on, Miss Upcott. The light came from the far room.
Yes. The light and the voices.
Voices?
One was Madame's. There was no mistaking it. She sounded angry, hysterical. She was calling out, stripped, stripped to the skin, and laughing wildly. The other spoke in a whisper. And then there was a sound of movements, as though Madame were being forced down onto the bed and held. And her voice died to a mumble, and then silence. Then the second voice again, in a low, clear whisper. That will do now. It was horrible. I haven't admitted it to myself until now. But beyond that doorway, Mrs. Harlow was being murdered. I'm convinced of it.
What did you do?
I ran back upstairs to my room.
Well, you aroused no one? You rang no bell?
I thought it was the nurse's voice.
Oh, you would not make me believe that. If it was the nurse's voice, why did you run away?
Betty, what shall I say?
Monsieur Allo.
Hmm?
We've tried to keep this back from you, but since my uncle's death, Madame drank heavily.
Aha. The little secret?
If anyone interfered, she grew violent and threatening. We were utterly in despair. She had a weak heart and we feared for her health.
The letter I was to write was to a doctor in England.
A last hope.
We didn't have much faith in it, but we felt we ought to try.
So, that night in the treasure room, you believed Madame was not herself. Now you believe she was being murdered a few feet away from you?
I don't want to believe it, but yes.
And you've told no one else this story?
No. Next morning, Mrs. Harlow was found dead. There were troubles enough in the house without my adding to them.
And of course, you didn't associate the noises with Madame's death?
No. Now I know. If you are right, and murder was committed here on the night of the 27th. I heard that murder being committed.
At exactly 10:30. By the clock on the marquetry cabinet. I must ask you, mademoiselle, does that clock keep good time?
Very good. It's an 8-day clock. When the seals are broken, you'll be able to see for yourself.
The fact won't have escaped you, Inspector, but Betty, my client, was at the dance at 10:30 that night.
Truly? At the house of Monsieur de Pouillac. Of that there is no doubt. Well, we shall adjourn. The seals will be broken this afternoon at 3:00 in the presence of the commissaire. Au revoir.
At 3:00 then, Monsieur Arnaud. We will be waiting.
Monsieur Arnaud.
Ah, my young friend. Are you not lunching with the ladies?
It seems they both had things to do. If it's convenient, I'd like to ask you something.
Oh, by all means. I will give you a small treat. Come with me to the top of old Philippe Le Bon's terrace tower. The view is remarkable, and we shall have the world to ourselves.
Mont Blanc. Beautiful.
Sparkling with gold as though the flame of a fire leapt and sank. So, you are troubled about this case?
Yes.
Despite the obvious innocence of your client.
It's about Anne Upcott. You believe she was telling the truth? I do.
I am looking for a criminal.
Well, surely no one could have mimicked fear quite so convincingly. And what could she have to gain by murder?
Verbersky expected a fine, fat legacy.
Verbersky?
Now, what if in return for help, he proposed to share this legacy with the exquisite Mademoiselle Anne? She has a motive now. And what do we know of her, after all, except that she is a paid companion and therefore poor? We do not even know how she came into the house. Oh, you're looking at me strangely, my friend. Have you something to tell me?
When I saw you in Paris, I told you I'd never seen Anne Upcott in my life.
And yet she recognized you the moment she entered the library.
I have no intention of misleading you, I swear.
Go on.
I saw Anne Upcott at the sporting club in Monte Carlo in January of this year, at the 30-40 table.
Mm-hmm.
She was alone and losing all her money. When she got up, I slipped a 1,000-franc note on the floor, and as she turned to move, I stopped her and said, "This is yours, you dropped it."
Oh, such chivalry.
I'd been winning quite heavily. Anyway, she refused the money with a smile. Later, she came up and addressed me by name. She thanked me and insisted that she wasn't in any trouble. Then she returned to her companion, Boris Verbersky. I'd met him only a few days before.
Then it does not look so very well for Mademoiselle Anne.
You really take her for his accomplice? Messiano, what's the matter? Have you seen something?
Always I see something. I am Anno. Over there.
It's the Maison Grenelle.
And above it? Rising from the chimney stack?
A wisp of black smoke. Well?
Ah, my friend. The responsibility of being Anno. Ah, now we shall have luncheon, and afterwards, the ceremony of the seals.
Oui, Girardot, commissaire of police. Now remove the seals. So. Voilà. The bedroom of Madame Harlow.
Yes, as I thought. All clean and tidy. It will be a miracle if we find anything to help us here. That is the bell to the nurse's bedroom?
Yes.
Then perhaps, mademoiselle, you will be kind enough to accompany Monsieur le Commissaire's assistant.
Thévenet. Maurice Thévenet.
Monsieur Thévenet.
At your service.
To the nurse's room and close the door. The bell will be pressed in here. You will tell us if it rings.
My pleasure. Anything at all.
This way, then, Monsieur Thévenet.
Most kind, yes.
We will allow them a moment. Are these drawers and cupboards open?
This one's locked.
They all are. I was here when Betty locked them after Madame's death and lodged the key with a notary. She thought it the right thing to do, since the terms of the will were not discussed till the funeral.
So they are still as they were on the night of the 27th?
That's right.
Good. Now, Mr. Frobisher, would you kindly press the bell? One long ring will do. Thank you.
Not a sound.
The Maison Grenelle is steadily built. Once again, please. Thank you. That is the door to Madame's dressing room?
Yes.
And beyond that, the treasure room?
Yes.
I wish to report, monsieur.
Yes?
The bell rang twice.
It is then in full working order. Now, we shall see whether the door to the treasure room is locked or open, with mademoiselle's permission.
Please go ahead. It's just through the dressing room.
Unlocked. And the treasure room is well named. A pretty world for rich people. The pictures are by Fragonard?
You are a connoisseur, monsieur.
And the writing table?
Chinese Chippendale. And the inkstand, pen tray and so on are a Battersea enamel.
And this is the famous sedan chair.
Dainty, isn't it?
Miss Anne?
Monsieur?
I take it that that is the clock which marked 10:30 during the moment the light was turned on?
Yes. Yes, that's it. Mm.
Louis Quinze, I think. And exacto the minute. And over there?
A pendant in gold and chalcedony by Benvenuto Cellini.
May I?
Please help yourself.
Mm. Oh, incomparable. But if Mademoiselle will permit, placed a little too high to be seen properly.
The room contains so many fine objects.
Oh, indeed, one could spend a long day here admiring the treasures.
I thought we were going to spend the afternoon looking for an arrow.
Ah, you recall me to my duty. Now, what is all this? It would seem that someone has been burning paper in the grate.
It was I.
Oh, when?
On Saturday night, a few, and the rest on Sunday morning, before Monsieur le Commissaire arrived.
And what were they?
Private letters.
I must press you, mademoiselle.
It can harm nobody now. Very well. It seems that everything, no matter how sacred, is to be dragged out into the light. They were letters which passed between my uncle and Mrs. Harlow before their marriage.
Love letters?
Speaking of very intimate things. Tender, passionate. They had to be destroyed.
Mademoiselle, once again I force you to a statement which makes me ashamed and does you honor. I apologize. However, one must examine the fragments.
By all means.
Aha. It seems you burnt more than letters, mademoiselle.
Monsieur?
A bill, too. See?
Possibly.
It is the 375 francs and 5 centimes. Unfortunately, none of the words have been left complete. What's this? Struction. Instruction. Construction. And the last 4 letters of the company's name. E-R-O-N.
No, it is of no importance. Mademoiselle, there is another letter you were going to show me.
Ah, yes. Mm. I'll get it.
I don't understand.
Nor I.
An anonymous letter received by Miss Harlow. Oh,
despicable.
Mm. Vile.
It is dated 7th of May and signed The Scourge. It contains many obscenities.
You should never have had to read this sort of thing.
You are for it, Betty Harlow. I know the detective from Paris is coming for you with handcuffs in his pocket. Etc., etc.
And the date is 7th of May.
Indeed.
7th?
Have you any objection to my keeping this, mademoiselle?
I shall be happy never to see it again.
Excellent. So, now, let us look for the famous arrow, or we shall have Monsieur Frobisher displeased with us again.
If it is in this room, you'll find it in that cabinet. Here is the key.
Thank you. It is not here. But then I did not think it would be.
We have finished, then?
Not yet. I have a small experiment to make. Mademoiselle, would you send for your maid, Francine Rollard? You are Francine Rollard?
I am.
I want your help in reenacting a little scene.
Very well.
You and mademoiselle will please come with me to the bedroom.
Monsieur Anneau. I can guess what you propose to do, and it is horrible.
You're going to reconstruct the scene that night, aren't you? It's needlessly cruel to Betty, and it can't help at all.
Ladies, if Madame Harlow was done to death, the offender must be known and punished.
Come, Francine.
Oh, mademoiselle, the police, they frighten me.
There is nothing to fear.
You, Mademoiselle Anne, will stand where you stood that night in the darkness. Monsieur Frobisher will remain with you for comfort. Come then, ladies.
I'm frightened.
It'll be all right, Anne. Don't worry.
Yes.
Are you ready, Mademoiselle Anne?
I'm ready.
Then listen carefully.
That will do now.
Mademoiselle, was that the whisper that reached your ears on the night when Madame died?
Yes. except that on the night, the words were whispered only once.
Just now, would you say it was the same voice which whispered them the second time?
I noticed no difference, yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now you understand the purpose of the experiment. It was Francine Rollard who whispered the words the first time, I myself the second. There is in a voice that whispers no intonation, no depth, no likeness, no sex. So we have not the slightest idea of the identity of the person who whispered, that will do now, on the night Madame died. Forgive me, Mademoiselle Anne. Francine, I'm sorry I frightened you. You will see, after all, that the police are not such alarming people. You may go now. And do not say a word to anyone.
I won't, monsieur. Not one.
Mademoiselle Anne, you are still troubled.
It's the clock.
Yes?
It seems lower than it was. Of course it can't be.
Monsieur Anne.
Mademoiselle?
A pearl necklace is missing from Madame's jewel case. The lid came open when I touched it.
Well, if murders are committed, there will always be some reason. This necklace, was it of great value?
It was worth a fortune.
There were 35 matched pearls. They had cost my uncle nearly £100,000.
Good grief.
I expect it is mislaid, and we shall find it.
Possible. Who knew of this necklace, mademoiselle?
Oh, everyone in the house.
Everyone?
I can see how your mind is working, Monsieur Anne. I'd like you to search my rooms.
No, Anne, I won't have it.
It's only fair to me. I'll wait in the library.
And we gentlemen will search Miss Upcott's rooms.
We shall find nothing of interest.
If she stole it, she'll have it well hidden.
Well, one never knows. Frobisher, will you?
I'd rather you left me out of it, if you don't mind. I don't much relish prying into a lady's private belongings.
As you wish.
Whilst you're searching, I'll write to my partner to tell him how we're getting on.
The desk is at your disposal. I'm sure Miss Anne would not object. Help yourself.
Yes, I will. It's a rotten nib.
Monsieur Giraudot, Monsieur Tavernet, perhaps you would be kind enough to search the bedroom.
At your disposal.
Of course.
It keeps falling out of the pen.
My friend?
This nib, one can't write with it at all.
Ah, how you do help me.
Eh?
The old rules are best. Hide a thing in an out-of-the-way cupboard and it will surely be found. Put it to lie carelessly down under one's nose.
I'm sorry, I don't...
Look at the pen more closely.
It's a perfectly ordinary pen.
Oh, no. It's most extraordinary. It is the shaft of the arrow.
Good heavens.
Which has been cut down, stained with varnish, and mixed with the other pens in the tray. Someone has moved fast. Only since this morning has the arrow been a dangerous thing to possess, to be hidden away in a hurry. Not bad.
Well done, Anno.
Yes, a useful discovery. Proof that the arrow exists and that it was in this house. What we need to find now is the arrow head.
Do you think that's hidden here, too?
Search by all means. That is, if you have overcome your scruples.
I'd rather not, if you don't mind. It doesn't look too good for Anne, does it?
We keep this to ourselves, you understand?
Yes.
The necklace is not in there.
Indeed not.
Nor is it here.
But you didn't even look.
Let us go downstairs.
You have searched my rooms?
Thoroughly, Mademoiselle Anne.
And you did not find the necklace?
No. But I have a question.
Yes?
Exactly how did you come to the Maison Grenelle?
I was at Monte Carlo.
Where you made the acquaintance of Boris Verbersky?
Yes.
And so you came to this house?
Yes.
It is all very curious.
Not really. Up to 18 months ago, I lived with my mother in Dorsetshire, on a small estate. On her death, I sold the estate and set off for London, where I achieved nothing. After a year, I had £300 left, and I decided to have 10 days in Monte Carlo and make a fortune, or lose the lot.
And you lost the lot?
After 5 weeks, I had won £400. Then in 3 dreadful nights, I lost everything. Mr. Frobisher can tell you about that last night. He tried to make me a present of 1,000 francs.
But you had met Boris Verbersky before that night?
About a fortnight before, yes.
And Mademoiselle Harlow?
Monsieur Boris introduced us a day or two later in the lounge of the Hotel de Paris.
And was it not at Verbersky's suggestion that you should join the Harlow household?
On that night, yes.
Thinking, no doubt, that the time was ripe. Mademoiselle Upcott?
You must not be misled, Monsieur Anno. Monsieur Boris may well have mentioned the idea to Anne that night, but I had already told both him and my aunt that I should like her to live with me.
On so short an acquaintance?
I liked her very much from the beginning. And the 4 months she has been here have proved me to be right.
Well, mademoiselle, against such loyalty, the world is powerless. I have taken up too much of your time.
Good evening, Inspector Anna.
You?
Why not? You said at 9 o'clock on any evening I could find you here at the Grand Tavern.
Ah, indeed I did. It had simply not occurred to me that the young ladies would let you out of their sight twice in one day.
Oh, on the contrary, I got the impression they could hardly wait to be rid of me.
The fortunes of war, my friend. Waiter?
Oui, monsieur.
Another bock, if you please.
Tout de suite, monsieur.
I'm not interrupting anything.
No, no, I'm glad you came. I hope to get to the truth tonight. And I think you ought to be present.
The truth?
Mm-hmm.
From whom will you get it?
Jean Cladel.
The herbalist?
In a little while, we will pay a visit to the street of the Gambetta.
My word. Do you think he'll talk?
Oh, of that I have no doubt. You're looking unhappy.
I'm as eager to get at the truth as you are, of course.
But?
I just hope Anne Upcott had nothing to do with it.
Voilà, monsieur.
Your beer.
Thank you.
Things are not looking too good for Miss Upcott, are they?
Sadly, no. Mm. She received an anonymous letter at dinner this evening.
You're sure?
It was the same cheap paper, typewritten in the same way.
And?
She was shaken, of course.
She showed it to no one?
On the contrary, Betty and I both read it. Mm. It said that if Anne wished to establish her innocence, she must attend a masked ball at the Chateau Levay tomorrow evening. She'd been invited, but decided not to go.
A kindness from this scourge? Oh, how strange. Will she now attend the ball?
I think she will. Mm. She and Betty went off after dinner to discuss it. That's when I came here. Inspector, do you truly think she's guilty?
My friend, if you want to know what I believe, go to the church of Notre Dame and look at the facade. Then you will have your answer.
I'll go tomorrow.
Seems that Monsieur Cladel is now at home.
Well, how do you know that?
Oh, one has one's assistant. Come along. We go to the herbalist shop.
Oh, my beer.
Hmm? Oh, another time. Oh.
What?
Good evening, Inspector.
It seems we have a guest.
Oh, Monsieur Frobisher.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Maurice Thévenet, assistant to Monsieur le Commissaire, in case you had forgotten. We were together this afternoon at the Maison Grenelle.
We had not forgotten.
Trust I am not presuming?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, I should be desolated if I had broken into your conversation.
We were about to leave.
Oh, then I will not detain you. I merely wish to say, Inspector, how honored I was today to have collaborated with such an artist in his field.
You flatter me.
I could not but be aware of the fact that I was in the presence of a master.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps I may beg your indulgence for one little moment more. To ask your advice.
Upon what subject?
I have to say, though it may sound immodest, that I feel constricted here in Dijon.
Hmm?
One has ambitions to get to Paris, to establish reputation, to live a fuller life with gaiety and color. And indeed, I work night and day towards that end.
I'm sure.
A word in the right quarter from someone, Monsieur Anneau, like yourself. Need I say more?
Monsieur Tavernet, you may be assured that when the time comes, I shall remember you. I make that promise now with my whole heart.
A thousand thanks.
And now, Monsieur Frobisher, we shall be on our way. Au revoir, Monsieur Tavernet.
Good night to you. And, once again, you have my undying thanks.
So this is the Rue de Gambetta.
Indeed.
I see what Verbeski meant. It isn't very salubrious, is it?
This is the place.
Jean Cladel, herbalist.
Ring the doorbell, if you please.
Yes, of course.
He lives alone. One may have to wait a moment if he has gone to bed. Ring again.
Who is there?
The police. We need information. Open the door.
Very well. I will come down.
In a few moments, we shall touch the truth of this affair.
That's if anyone brought the arrow to him at all.
I think they did. What's keeping him? He's taking longer than he need. I don't like it. Something's wrong. Come, we will go to the back. Quickly. Not a pleasant sight.
No.
If I had anticipated this, I would not have asked you to accompany me.
I'm all right now. I suppose he is dead, is he?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately.
So much blood. Is it Cladel?
Indeed. He was stabbed in the back. Upwards into the heart. The Catalan way. He is still warm.
But who can have murdered him?
The man who spoke to us from the window. Who else?
We spoke to him then?
He is standing over the body as the doorbell rings. He calls that he is coming down and slips out by the back door as we wait at the front. Oh, if only we'd arrived a few minutes earlier. Monsieur Tavernet has much to answer for.
Well, Cladel will be of no use to us now, Inspector.
I'm not so sure. Observe the drawer of the bureau.
It's open.
Perhaps we were lucky and interrupted the intruder in his search. Look in the cabinet. I will search your bureau.
What are we looking for?
The arrowhead, of course.
Oh, yes, of course. The Catalan way, you said.
Yes? Why?
There was a man visiting the Maison Grinnell when I first arrived. Carlos Espinosa. He was a Catalan. I got the impression that Betty was rather in awe of him.
You're learning fast, my friend. Ah. Voila.
You found it?
No doubt about it.
No further doubt, then, that Madame Harlow was murdered?
None. Come, the commissaire must be informed of what has happened here tonight.
Oh, Jim, isn't this beautiful?
It was a good idea of yours.
The blue sky, the fresh air. Oh, I can't tell you what a tonic it is to be free of that town, if only for a few hours.
You've been under a great strain.
Pray God it's nearly over now.
I'm sure it is. If the magistrate had doubted your innocence, he wouldn't have released your car.
I do hope you're right. Over to the left, that's the chateau of Monsieur Levay, where Anne is attending the ball this evening.
It's a forbidding-looking place.
And secluded. Even though it's only 25 minutes from the main road to Paris and 48 minutes from the Maison Grenelle.
You're very precise.
I just timed it and didn't want to be late.
She decided to go then?
Yes. I'm lending her the car. She can be here in 50 minutes.
I suppose she's eager to establish her innocence.
Oh, Jim. She's chasing shadows.
The letters have been right before. What about the one telling you about Arnaud?
Do you mind if we stop for a while? I want to talk to you.
Well, that sounds serious.
About Anne, we must be practical. You've become very fond of her, haven't you?
Yes.
If she could get to England, they couldn't bring her back, could they? They haven't enough evidence.
Run away, you mean? It would be like pleading guilty.
She needs time, that's all. Time for the necklace to be traced, for Cladel's murderer to be found.
Would she consent to go?
She has already. Jim, she ought to go at once and as secretly as possible.
Yes.
Arnaud's convinced of her guilt.
I suppose he is.
We know he is. He was on the point of arresting her yesterday.
We can make sure anyway.
Hmm?
I asked him point blank last night. And he gave me the strangest answer.
What did he say?
He told me to visit the church of the Notre Dame and read from the facade whether Anne was guilty or not.
Notre Dame? That's terrible.
Why?
I'll show you. Jim?
Yes?
Will you abide by what you see? If Anno thinks her innocent, she stays. If he thinks her guilty, she goes.
All right. That's if it can be managed.
We settled the details last night. I'll get you to Notre Dame by 5 o'clock. This is the church of Notre Dame.
My God. The message is easy to read.
Yes. A representation of the Last Judgment.
With the damned rising in torment from their graves.
I'm sorry, Jim.
All those tortured faces.
Listen, you know I don't believe for a moment in Anne's guilt, but...
She must go. That's clear. And as soon as possible.
Tonight. We've made the arrangements. She will leave from Levay's after the ball. She'll be in Paris by morning and London tomorrow night, safe.
How can I help?
By keeping Anno occupied at the Grand Taverne.
The Grand Taverne? You know about that?
All Dijon knows about it. It's hard to keep a secret in a small town.
Waiter, another bock, please, for monsieur.
Oui, monsieur.
You are in high spirits this evening, my friend.
Well, why not?
A little trip in the motor car today appears to have done you good.
Of course. Blue skies, fresh air, charming company. We went to the Val Terzon.
Yes, I know where you went.
Eh?
You lunched at the crossroads with the Route Nationale to Paris. You ordered omelette, a cutlet of pork with salad, and a bottle of Clos du Prince in 1904. With coffee, you smoked a cigar, and Mademoiselle Betty a cigarette.
You had no right to have us followed.
No right? That was no casual outing you went on today. It was a rehearsal. The route minutely worked out in advance. Maison Grenelle, Chateau Levay, the Route Nationale to Paris.
You know, don't you, about Anne's planned escape? Let her go. Let her go to England.
I begin to see.
But you can't get a conviction against her. You haven't the evidence. Even the pearl necklace hasn't been traced.
It has, my friend. It has.
You found it? Where?
I have a question for you.
Yes?
The facade at Notre Dame. You have seen it?
This afternoon. Betty took me.
Ah, yes.
That terrible bas-relief of the Last Judgment. Your message of Anne's guilt was very clear. Couldn't you have told me to my face?
I should have. I see that now.
I know you've been less than honest with me all along.
Then I will be honest with you now. Here is a torch. And bring your stick. Come with me. Do you know where we are?
I have a fairly good idea. We're near to the street of Charles Robert.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Maison Grenelle, just over there.
And this is the Hôtel de Crevisard.
Impressive.
It was built by Étienne Bouchard de Grenelle during the reign of Louis XV to house a joyous lady of the province, Madame de Brébizard. Yet there was no scandal. You know why?
I have no idea.
Because he constructed a secret passage between the hotel and his other residence, which was the Maison Grenelle.
A secret passage? Good grief.
Years later, Simon Harlow discovered the secret, bought back this house, restored the passage, and used it as old Étienne had done. He installed Madame Raviard, later Madame Harlow, and till her husband's death, they were free to carry on their liaison unobserved.
The house looks unoccupied.
After their marriage, the Harlows left it just as it was. A monument to their passion. Come. There is a garden at the back. We will enter the house from there.
I know. Is this strictly legal?
Follow me.
It's pitch black in here. I can't see a thing.
Use your torch, but sparingly. It would be fatal to advertise our presence now.
Shh. Hmm? What's that sound?
Hmm?
It's a clock ticking.
No doubt.
In an empty house?
This way.
Anno, wait for me. Good Lord.
What now?
The place is furnished.
Oh, yes.
There are even fresh flowers in the vases. I know.
Hmm?
Look, a Corona typewriter.
Indeed.
This is where the anonymous letters were written, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
The scourge worked from here.
Also, in that cabinet was where we found the pearl necklace.
I don't understand.
Later. We must be silent now. It will soon be time. We will wait here by the window. We can see the courtyard from here.
Oh, Anna, what are we waiting for? What on earth's going to happen?
Listen.
It's a motorcycle and sidecar. It's pulled up in the courtyard.
What else?
There are two men.
Yes.
They're lifting something out of the sidecar. It's a sack. They're bringing it into the house.
Get behind the curtain and keep silent.
Some of the weight, Devon, eh, damn you. I can't manage it on my own.
They're coming this way. It's a Spinoza.
This isn't my job. I should have been away from here by now. It was agreed.
And Tavernet.
It's not my fault she got suspicious and wouldn't drink the coffee. If she had, she'd have been easier to handle.
This is awful. How did I ever come to get in so deep?
Greed like me.
Yes, well, I don't relish being an accessory to murder.
You are already. Remember Cladel.
I was supposed to delay them, Espinoza, and I did.
Yes, for 2 minutes. If I'd been given more time,
you
think
bungled it.
The police were at the door. Anyway, you're in it up to the neck, just as I am. So give me a hand. She's heavy.
Where are we putting her?
In there. Well, come on, open the door.
There.
All right. Put her on the sofa.
Good.
Now, mademoiselle, keep still and keep quiet, or it'll be the worse for you. Do you hear what I say? You won't have long to wait.
What now?
We go. What else?
Come on, then.
You're all talk, Devonet, but when it comes to action...
Oh, I'm getting out of here. Come on.
They've gone. You've let them go.
They won't get far. My men have the house surrounded.
Then, for pity's sake, let's release the woman in the sack.
No.
But you heard what they said. They're planning to murder her, whoever she is.
My friend, I have so little proof to put before the court.
You're prepared to risk a woman's life to obtain a conviction?
I must. But shh. It's nearly over now.
What's that?
The secret passage from the Maison Grenelle. It runs from the sedan chair in the treasure room and comes out in here, a sliding panel.
Close it behind you. Yes.
There are two of them.
Turn on the light.
At once.
Oh, signora.
And then we can give our full attention to Mademoiselle.
And Betty Harlow. Oh, no.
That's better. You have the scissors?
Yes.
Then you can get her out now. It can't be very comfortable for her trussed up inside that sack.
Ah, the scissors are blunt. Oh, be patient, Miss Upcott. I'm being as quick as I can.
Oh, God. It's Anne. Anne, oh,
not yet, Jim. Please, for pity's sake.
I can't stand
a few more minutes. That's all I ask. She must be brought to justice.
Ah, there, that's better. Ah, do you feel better now, Mademoiselle Anne? Oh, mon Dieu. She's watching me like a dead person. Stop looking at me, you.
Is she ready?
Yes.
You can take the gag off. No one can hear her now.
Hold still. Ah, so.
Hello, Anne.
What are you doing?
Preparing a syringe. You won't feel much pain. 15 minutes. That's all the poison takes.
You're going to murder me, aren't you? As you murdered Madame Harlow. You're bound to be caught.
I think not, Anne, dear. Anno and your English friend Frobisher will imagine you to be in England. Your death and disappearance are my passport to safety.
You wrote that letter, didn't you? Advising me to go to Madame Levay's tonight.
I wrote them all. Here in my own little hideaway.
Why?
Dijon is a prison to me. I needed excitement. At first, the letters were amusement, but then, as I soon discovered, a blackmailer can herself become vulnerable to blackmail. The victim become an accomplice, and Espinosa and Tavernet were greedy.
You're wasting time, mademoiselle.
Oh, what harm can it do if she knows the truth? We sent Madame an anonymous letter telling her that her affair with Simon Harlow had been discovered. Madame showed it to me as I was about to leave for the dance. She was very angry. During the evening, she came in here through the secret passage to check that her love letters were still safe. She found the place furnished, saw the typewriter, and came to the obvious conclusion. She returned to the Maison Grenelle and instructed Francine to bring me to her room on my return from the dance.
I won, mademoiselle, of course.
I went to my room and filled the syringe, intending it for myself. Then we went to Madame's bedroom together.
But now she was furious and much the worse for drink. She hurled abuse, threatened to cut me out of her will, stripped me to the skin. Then it occurred to me that my freedom and fortune were within my grasp. I injected the drug into her arm.
I covered her mouth and held her down.
That will do now. It was quickly over.
How could you?
Of course, I should have disposed of Madame's letters, but I didn't know that an inspector from the Sûreté would come sniffing round. I had to think fast. Shift the guilt onto you. Burn the letters, hide the arrowhead in your room, remove the pearl necklace. My life was suddenly full of excitement. Anyway, Anne, it seems you lose again.
Oh, no.
15 minutes, that's all. And tomorrow, Espinosa will put you under one of the stone flags in the kitchen.
I think not, mademoiselle.
Anno!
This same.
You won't take me.
Oh, mademoiselle, no, no!
Stop, Anno!
Oh, let her. Mademoiselle, colored water doesn't kill.
You're bluffing.
You will see. As you say, it takes only 15 minutes.
Oh, damn you!
I remove the arrow poison from your desk this morning. Morrow, Patino, take these two ladies away.
Oh, you filthy hands! Let go!
Au revoir, mademoiselle. I shall, of course, see you in court.
Anne, are you all right?
Oh, Jim, thank God you came.
Nothing to fear now.
I owe you an apology, mademoiselle Anne. I never from the beginning believed you guilty, but this last week, only by pretending I did, could I protect you from Miss Harlow.
I understand.
I would not have subjected you to this evening's events if I had known the cruelty with which you were to be handled. I would have sacrificed this crucial evidence. Forgive me.
Monsieur Anno, but for you, I wouldn't be alive now. There is nothing to forgive.
Then put these miseries behind you. The nightmare is over. I suggest you both return now to the Maison Grenelle by the direct route, through the passage to the sedan chair and the treasure room, and I shall explain everything to you tomorrow.
Come along, Anne.
Yes.
Take good care of her, my friend.
I will.
Well, come on then, Anno. Don't keep us in suspense. It's time you spilled the beans.
Spilled the...
You told us how you solved the case.
Oh. Well, there were 2 great mistakes made, my friends. One at the very beginning by Betty Harlow, one at the end by me. Mine was the less excusable. Betty's mistake was made when she panicked and sent that telegram to London.
Why was it a mistake?
Well, she claimed later that she had received an anonymous letter informing her I had been sent for and that this letter had arrived on the Sunday morning. She had to say this since she also claimed that the letter was in her room, which the commissaire had sealed at 11 o'clock on the Sunday morning.
Yes, but I still don't see...
Well, I was not sent for until the Sunday night. Therefore, I knew at once that she was lying.
Hardly incriminating.
It was enough to put me on my guard.
She could so easily have said she had destroyed the letter.
But she didn't, knowing quite well that she could write one and place it in the treasure room by way of the secret passage before the seals were removed.
Yes, of course.
Presumably she learnt you'd been called in from Maurice Thévenet.
One must assume so, since he worked with the commissaire. My next discovery of note was the book by the learned Edinburgh professor.
Which you picked out by the absence of dust.
Also by the fact that it had not been in its place the previous afternoon. I noticed the telltale gap. Someone had returned the book to the library overnight. Again, not incriminating in itself, but when the wretched Waberski, who is of course totally innocent in the affair, said that he had seen Betty Harlow at the shop of Jean Cladel, my suspicions were roused more than ever. I have her followed. She is seen entering the Hotel Brebizard. Shortly afterwards, from the top of the Philippe Le Bon's tower, you and I, Frobisher, see smoke rising from the chimney of the sealed treasure room as she burns the letters written by Simon Harlow to his love.
The wisp of black smoke.
Miss Harlow and her friends were by now in some confusion. They murdered Cladel to prevent his testimony and in the hope of recovering the arrowhead from his shop.
Which they failed to do.
In desperation, Betty attempted to incriminate you, Mademoiselle Anne, finally arranging your escape to London, which, had it been successful, would have brought all our investigations to a sudden halt.
Horrible.
She would stop at nothing to cover her tracks. In the end, I needed to catch her red-handed, or no doubt she would have slipped from my grasp to continue her dreadful work.
And never once did you take me into your confidence, Anno.
Well, how could I? Betty was your client. I couldn't fully trust you.
Well, I heard this morning she's not my client any longer. She's engaged a famous advocate to handle her defense. I've been informed that she never wants to see me again.
She found you attractive, my friend. One must expect a little spite.
Inspector Anno?
Mademoiselle?
There's still something I don't understand. The clock.
Ah, yes. Betty Harlow's alibi. I have the answer to that, too. What time is it now?
Nearly 1:20.
Ah, how convenient. Give me 5 minutes, and then follow me to the treasure room. Come this way. I'm ready now.
Then, Monsieur Anno, the hallway is in darkness.
Why have you drawn the curtains?
I want everything to be the way it was that night.
Oh, is this really necessary?
No, Jim, please. I want to know.
Very well.
Mademoiselle Anne, I want you to open this door to the treasure room, as you did that fatal night. And then I want you to turn the lights on and off swiftly. During that moment, I want you to observe the time by the Louis XV clock on the marquetry cabinet. Is that understood?
Yes.
Very well. You may commence the experiment now.
Good grief.
Well?
The clock said 10:30.
Yes, 10:30. I saw it too.
You're sure?
Yes.
Well, no doubt about it.
And somehow the clock is higher again, as I remembered it that night.
Exactly as you remember it?
Exactly.
Then re-enter the treasure room now and discover the truth. Voila.
But there's no clock on the cabinet at all.
It's over there, on the mantelpiece opposite.
But the clock face is reflected in the mirror on the wall, reversing the figures on the clock face.
So what appeared to be 10:30 is in reality
1:30.
And at that time, on the 27th of April, Betty was already back home from Monsieur de Pouillac's ball. Having been provided inadvertently with what seemed a cast-iron alibi, she was not slow to realize the importance of that clock being on the table by the time the seals were broken. So she came in here, in the usual way, rearranged the ornaments, placing the clock on the table and the Cellini jewel on the mantelpiece, where, I remarked at the time, it was displayed to little advantage. However, when I took it down to admire it, and saw 4 little marks on the shelf made by the feet of the Louis XV clock, everything became clear.
You understand it all so quickly.
Oh, I'm trained, my friend, that's all.
I think we all deserve some coffee. I won't be long.
Ah, a delightful young lady.
Yes, indeed.
She would make some English gentleman a splendid wife. Oh, dear, I see from your proper look I'm becoming impertinent again. It is only because I wish you well.
Anno, you were saying a while back that you had made a mistake. What was it?
I told you to read my estimate of Anne Upcott on the facade of the Church of Notre Dame.
And I did. It was...
No, monsieur. What you saw was the facade of the Church of Saint-Michel.
What?
Betty was banking on the fact that you are a stranger in Dijon, and that one church looks much like another.
She took me to the wrong church.
Yes, indeed. If you had gone to Notre Dame, you would have seen a frieze of devils, and amongst them, one girl praying, a prisoner amongst the monsters, imploring passers-by for their pity and their help. That's what I sent you to see. I meant you to see there that Anne was an innocent victim. Instead,
I saw grim evidence of her guilt.
Huh?
But I know what a risk Betty was taking. I could so easily have noticed it was the wrong church. I can't think how I didn't.
She was playing for the highest stakes.
Well, she'd have won, too, if it hadn't been for you.
Who knows? Well, my friend, that is the end of the affair. I'll return to Paris, and you? Oh, no doubt you must hurry back to London.
Well, I haven't made any firm plans yet. I thought I'd stay on a few more days. There are still a few more loose ends to tie up with Anne.
Ah, an excellent idea. But what of your senior partner, the formidable Mr. Hapgood? Will he not be angry at the delay?
No. I think just this once. He'll probably understand.
That was The House of the Arrow. It was adapted by Alan Downer from the novel by A.E.W. Mason. Inspector Anno was played by Richard Pascoe. Jim Frobisher, Benedict Blythe. Betty Harlow, Moya Leslie. Anne Upcott, Deborah Makepeace. Francine Rolla, Carol Boyd. Boris Verbersky and Girardot by Alfredo Michaelson. Carlos Espinosa and Gaston by Clive Panto. And Maurice Tevenet by Mark Jones. The music was composed and directed by Terence Albright, and the play was directed by Christopher Venning.